Hello.
Hey.
Hey.
Do you have a minute?
Yes. Yes.
Thanks for doing all the work on mom's birthday gift.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, I talked to her today and I was like, we'll have to discuss again once whatever it is arrives. And she was like, I need to know if this is going to make me feel bad or if it's nice.
And what I was like, why mean? Would it
make you? And I was like, why would it make you feel bad? And she's like, okay, let me break it down for you. Is it something that's too good for me and will make me feel guilty, or is it funny? And I was like, oh, don't you worry. It's firmly in the funny camp.
Oh, God, that makes me feel so bad.
So that was the two categories gifts could fall into?
The gift that's coming is ice cream. Like, should we have gotten something nicer?
No, I don't think she would have wanted that. That's like dad's department, where he like obsesses over it for a long time and then buys her a pocketbook that she's always wanted.
I also think that pocketbook is only a term we use in our house.
It's true. I've truly never heard another person use it. I guess handbag is usually what people say, but
purse.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I never even thought about that.
So I'm not actually calling today as your sister.
Are you kidding me? Longest fucking lead-in. Did you notice how tense I was at the beginning? I thought it might be this and I got really anxious. But now I'm you warmed me up.
I could tell.
I just want you to know, though, I'm so excited to actually know the truth about this.
Okay, can you record yourself on your phone?
Yes, hold on 1 second.
I am recording. I'm good to go.
Okay, you came to me with a factual emergency maybe 30 to 40 times in the last month.
At least. I mean, it could be more, honestly.
And each time I said the same thing.
Go on. What was that response?
833-RING-ELT.
That's true. You did make a plug for the show.
And you took my advice on this one issue. And call the ELT helpline. And here's the mystery that's been plaguing you.
Hi, Flora. This is Ruth, and I do, in fact, have a factual emergency. To explain this query, I have to actually go back a year ago to when we hosted a pumpkin carving party in my backyard. Roughly 30 pumpkins were carved. All of their innards were then tossed into our compost. A year later, we turned that compost, put it in our gardening beds, and lo and behold, the insane number of pumpkin seeds did in fact sprout many, many pumpkin plants. Like every day we were pulling out probably 20 to 30 pumpkin sprouts, which seemed to grow, I don't know, like 2 inches an hour. It was wild. Okay. Eventually we decide, let's make a pumpkin patch. And here's where things get really weird. The vines take over our entire backyard. I start bragging to friends that I'm going to have grown my own pumpkins this year for jack-o'-lantern carving. And then what grows from them is not a pumpkin at all, but about 50 decorative gourds. I'm talking bumpy, green, yellow. You can picture them. I have Googled so much, and I can't figure this out. Here's my question. Is it possible that the seeds of a pumpkin would produce decorative gourds?
Does that sum it up?
That's it. I nailed it. That's exactly my question.
Okay, so you say you planted pumpkin seeds and got decorative gourds.
Right.
So have any of your housemates ever grown decorative gourds in the past?
Okay, no. No one has ever grown decorative gourds.
Do you have a neighbor who's decorative gourd obsessed who might have improperly disposed of a gourd in your compost heap?
I really love the idea that somebody is like sneaking over the fence at night and burying gourds in there, being like, just wait and see what's going to happen next year.
Okay. Well, as you know from our many conversations about this, I have been a little bit skeptical of this question.
Yes, I'm well aware of your skepticism.
The reason I was skeptical is because it seemed impossible. Like, it makes no sense that you would plant a pumpkin seed and get a gourd.
Correct. But that's right. But what?
I have some news.
Ruth, what you saw is actually quite possible and quite probable in a situation like what was described. So you're not crazy, Ruth. What you saw actually happened.
The vindication I feel in this moment is the greatest high of my life. I'm really like, feeling it.
Take a moment. Collect yourself.
Got to take a deep breath here.
So that was Steve Reiners, the planet's preeminent pumpkin expert.
I've been working with pumpkins probably for the last 30 years.
And he was pumped to talk pumps.
I have a very close relationship to pumpkins and gourds, actually. They're one of my favorite crops to work with.
So are you ready for the stringy, sticky scoop on your bewildering pumper stumper?
Get out. Yes, I'm more than ready. I'm more than ready for the big reveal here.
Pumpkins belong to the species Cucurbita pipo.
Cucurbita pipo.
Cucurbita pipo.
Got it. Cucurbita pipo.
Any Cucurbita pipo can interbreed with any other Cucurbita pipo. Okay?
Okay.
I don't know why you're laughing.
I'm sorry. It's the repetition of Cucurbita pipo.
Let me put it like this. There's a lot of variety in the pipo pavilion, and they can all breed with each other.
All the summer squash, all the zucchinis, all the gourds, for the most part, are all in that same Cucurbita pipo. And there's a few other, what we might call winter squash, that they could cross with.
So zucchini, summer squash, gourds, pumpkin, some winter squash can all interbreed.
Whoa.
Meaning there are a lot of possible pipo-pipo progeny combinations.
That is a lot of combos. I guess I'm just wondering, though, like, in this specific case where everything that was produced was the same type of gourd, where in the process did that occur?
When did it become a gourd?
Yes. When did the pumpkin become the gourd?
So we have to go back to last year when the pumpkins you carved were just flowers on a vine somewhere.
Okay, got it.
Steve said that somewhere near those pumpkin flowers, gourd plants must have been flowering.
What happened was there was some genetic manipulation that was going on. So they had probably been cross-pollinated with some pollen from gourds.
So out in that field, a bee carried gourd pollen over to your pumpkin flower. What do you get?
Well, I guess you're getting a decorative gourd.
Not that year.
Oh.
You get a pumpkin, which is just the big orange vessel for the offspring of that pumpkin and gourd. The actual offspring of the pumpkin and the gourd are the seeds in that pumpkin, the seeds that you threw into your compost heap.
Wow. Wow. So this is second generation decorative gourd child of pumpkin.
Your pumpkin's baby daddy was a gourd.
Okay. This is exactly what I wanted to know. This is it. This is what I wanted to know. And I feel so good knowing that this is the reality and not some imagined fantasy.
It was not imagined. Now, the next question is, why does every fruit on the vine look exactly like gourd daddy?
Yes. Why is only that piece of things being expressed? Where's mom, and why can't I carve her into a jack-o'-lantern for Halloween?
It could be that Gaddy's genes are dominant.
Did you just say Gaddy? Okay, so Gaddy's genes are just dominant generally and take over any pumpkin expression that we might have seen.
Yes.
Okay, so here's a little question for you. I went to a pumpkin patch, of course, you know, spurred on by my newfound interest in gourds and pumpkins, etc. And they had decorative gourds and pumpkins growing side by side. Was that a bad move on their part?
Well, if they're just growing the pumpkins and gourds to sell that year, it's fine. But if they're growing them for seeds, yeah, that pipo promiscuity is a problem.
If the seed company that's trying to produce these crops, what they will do is they will have very large fields and try to have as much isolation as possible. So it limits the chances of any type of cross-pollination from happening.
Whoa.
Seed growers keep their pumpkin plots like acres away from zucchini or gourd fields.
I guess I'm thinking about the future of, like, what happens when we do compost this huge crop of decorative gourds from this year? You know, what would that produce?
Steve's got an answer.
Well, that's a good question. So if she, let's say she just had gourds in her garden, she didn't have any other squash. There was no zucchini, there was no summer squash, there was nothing like that. And if some of her neighbors didn't have anything in their gardens, what I would expect she would get if she saved the seed would be essentially more gourds, because there wasn't going to be much of a chance for any cross-pollination to occur. But if she had some other squash out there in her garden or a neighbor close by did, then there's a chance that the bees could have moved some of that pollen.
Did you plant any other squash in your garden this year?
We had summer squash and we had zucchini that were growing at the same time.
So this could be a real Kinder Egg situation.
Yeah, that's my dream come true. I'm saying, how many weird things can this one plant pump out?
It feels like you're ripe for a Gourzini.
I'm hoping that there will be a Gourzini. I mean, a Zookzini. I mean, what am I trying to say?
A Zord?
A Zord. A Zord. Gourzini. Gourkini. Yeah, any of those. I would be happy for any weird hybrid.
I was thinking you could start Ruthie's Gaddy's Gourdy Garden. Ruthie's Gaddy's Gourdy Garden.
No, I'm not going to attempt that. I'm not going to repeat that back to you.
Gaddy's Gourdy.
I had a really hard time with Peepo, so what you just said feels like a big stretch for me to get there.
Should we wish Mom a happy birthday?
Yeah. Are we going to sing it? I mean, that feels like not a gift to anyone.
Happy birthday, Mom.
Happy birthday, Mom.
Love you.
Love you.
Just one of us. One of us loves you.
No, it's both of us. Don't pull me out of that.
It's just a long pause. Don't go away. The seasonal mysteries continue after the break.
You have reached the Do You Need Serious helpline. Please leave your message after the tone.
Hi, this is Lisa, and this is a factual emergency. Facial recognition. What if you're dead? Do your eyes roll back up into your head? Like, how do you unlock your phone? I tried this on my son. I tried to get him to fake as a dead body, but I kept telling him to make his eyes fixed and locked, but he kept focusing on the phone. So I really need to know. If you're dead, can you still unlock your phone?
Hello?
Lisa.
Yeah?
If you're dead, can you still unlock your phone?
Yeah, that's exactly what I need to know.
Why? Why do you need to know this?
It's just pure curiosity.
When I heard your message, I thought, okay, there are a couple options here. One, you are personally worried about someone getting into your phone when you're dead.
No, I'm not worried about that at all. My kids know my password. They can get into it easily.
Okay, that leaves the perhaps more worrying option that you're planning to break into a dead person's phone.
I mean, that's a possibility. What if your friend dies, say in a car accident, and I had to phone up her child? But I couldn't get into her phone because it was locked. Like, you definitely have to be staring at your phone for it to unlock. But if your eyes are dilated or if they've rolled up in your head, how's that going to happen?
Is this your thing, Lisa?
I just, maybe morbid in a way. Maybe I have a black sense of humor. I'll tell you my other death curiosity. Every time when you watch TV and there's a dead body, the people always act like they are so struggling to drag that dead body somewhere. Even if it's down the stairs, they're like, it's so hard. I'm always like to my kids, that can't be that hard. So this was another thing. I got my son to pose as a dead body. I got him just to lay down and I trapped these straps around his legs and I was trying to drag him to see.
Lisa, my mouth is agape right now. I wish you could see my face. Where did you drag your son?
He was here. He was in the living room floor. And This is what made me think of it. He got a new mattress, came in the mail, and it had these straps on it. And I thought, these would be great straps for dragging a dead body. So I made him lay down, and I wrapped him around his ankles, and I was trying to pull him. But he is a poor excuse for a dead body. And he was not being stiff, no rigor, and the strap slipped off of his foot, and I went flying backwards.
What's your son's name?
He goes by Rhino.
Does Rhino consent to these experiments?
It's just fun. It's fun to mess with them.
So it seems like you answered your question about dragging the dead body. So let us help you with the face ID question.
Okay, yeah, I'm excited.
So you don't have to drug Rhino to find out. So there is an answer to this question, and the answer is yes. You can unlock a phone using the owner's cold, dead face.
That's great. Even if their eyes are dilated?
Yep.
How does that work?
Last year, some security researchers in China figured out a way to hack Face ID if someone's eyes were closed, or in the case of your question, rolled up in the back of their head. And it's super simple. They presented it at a security conference. I'm going to send you the video.
Okay, here it is.
It's really simple, just ordinary glasses with two kind of tapes. One is black and the other is white.
Okay, so you take a pair of glasses, you put a rectangle of black tape on the lens, and then you put a smaller dot of white tape in the middle of that black tape. It almost looks like a black eyeball with a white pupil in the middle.
Okay.
And as you can see, the phone is unlocked.
What? That's crazy.
Basically, it works because when Face ID is reading the face of a person wearing glasses, it doesn't extract as much data about the eyes. So it's a weakness in the system and you can trick it.
And it says it has a high success rate in less than 2 minutes, suitable for any victim. That's fantastic.
We also reached out to Apple to see if they've updated their system to fix this, but we haven't heard back yet.
They're not going to tell you.
I guess you're right. If the answer is no, they're not going to be like, nope, we haven't fixed that.
I really feel satisfied by this. I'm going to try that out on Rye.
Yeah, good luck to Rhino. Tell him to stay safe.
He's perfectly safe. He has never been harmed in the making of these inventions of mine. No animals or children were harmed. He's fine.
So my sister and I grew up in Indiana next to a corn maze, and every year they would have a new design. So I was just curious, how do they do that? Thanks, ELT.
Hello?
Hey, Alexis, it's Flora from ELT.
Hi, Flora.
You said in your message you grew up next to a corn maze. Would you describe yourself as a child of the corn?
I mean, I don't want to, like, label myself, you know? But yeah, we probably went regularly every season. It was down the street, and it was, like, huge.
So you want to know how mazes are made?
Yeah.
We found just the person to walk us through it.
I sometimes say I'm an artist who works strictly in the medium of cornfields. I mean, which is actually true.
This is farmer and corn maze designer Angie Trinan.
Hi, Alexis.
Hi, Angie.
Angie's family farm is in Wisconsin. They grow corn, soybeans, and hay. And in the fall, they operate a 15-acre corn maze that attracts 15,000 people a year.
Wow.
And Angie's mazes are made for maze connoisseurs. Her designs really are outstanding in the field. She's a Vermeer of the year, a Pablo Picasso, really just a Van Gogh of the row.
She sounds so cool. Oh my gosh.
I'm going to send you some pictures of her mazes, and we'll put them on Instagram at ELT Show and on Spotify.
Oh my gosh. This is so ornate.
Yeah, like her portfolio includes a full merwoman scene, an enormous trilobite with a butterfly next to it and a fossil.
Yeah, the corn mazes that we grew up on are not this detailed.
I'd like to direct your attention to another one of her designs, the naked man with his arms outstretched doing jumping jacks.
Is that the Da Vinci?
Yeah, That's kind of the iconic Da Vinci sketch. It's called The Vitruvian Man, and I turned it into a cyborg.
How cool.
And then I added like a little circuit boardy kind of stuff and some steampunk elements.
I noticed he didn't have a fig leaf.
Oh.
Or anything else.
Yeah.
Did you ever think about what you might do there? Was that an artistic choice?
There's only so much resolution that you can have in a cornfield. But also, I didn't really want people to be like, yeah, because it will sometimes be like, oh, let's go into the elephant's eye. I didn't want them to be like, I know, let's go into the cyborg's
I don't know. I feel like that could be a big draw.
I see you now, Flora. I see where your head's at.
All right, let's cut to the cop. You want to know how Angie terraforms that field of corn into an amaze no balls maze.
Yes.
Many farms hire a corn maze company to design and build their maze. But on Angie's farm, they do it all. Angie's collecting ideas for the maze year-round, and then in early summer, she starts designing. And over the years, she's picked up some niblets of wisdom about how to make a successful corn maze.
So it has to be complicated enough that it's a challenge, but you don't want people to be so frustrated that they decide to just cut through the corn and say, I want to get the hell out of here. So long dead ends are terrible. Parts of the maze where you really can only get through one or two ways, and otherwise you're going in circles or whatever, are also not good.
And while Angie's puzzling through the design, her husband is planting the canvas. Picture a pegboard.
So he plants it in rows going one way and then also rows perpendicular to that. So he's essentially planting it in a grid.
Oh, neat.
So Angie makes her design and then puts a grid over that design that matches the grid growing in the cornfield. Then she can scale it up so each square of her design corresponds to 15 feet by 15 feet of cornfield. Then when the corn is less than a foot high, the crew starts cutting using her template.
So it's like, okay, you're on E7. So you're making a little indent here.
Exactly. So once the cutting is done, the maze finishes itself.
And by the time we open, it's like 10 feet tall.
How long does it take people to go through it generally?
If you're a really good navigator, you could do it in under 45 minutes. If you get lost, it can be a little bit longer. Maybe a lot longer.
Has anyone needed to be rescued?
People ask that all the time. And we're always like, no, you'll be fine. You'll find your way out eventually. We've gone in after school groups. And it's only an emergency then because like the bus is leaving.
Man, I think I was one of those students who wouldn't make the bus in time.
Before we let Angie go, we had a pitch for her.
Okay.
I'm sure this is very annoying. But I feel like I have a really good one for you.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, have you considered the flamingo?
Consider the flamingo.
Let me give you the pitch.
Okay.
Okay, what you don't maybe know about the flamingo is that it's one of the most badass creatures on the planet.
Every Little Thing is produced by Caitlin O'Keefe, Stephanie Werner, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman. With help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron.
What? Wait a minute.
Our consulting editors are Caitlin Kenny and Jorge Just. Scored by Bobby Lord, Emma Munger, and Dara Hirsch. Mixed by Dara Hirsch.
Wait a minute. What?
ELT is a Spotify original podcast.
You know, it's very spooky, good for Halloween season.
You know what? This is one of the very few pitches for a corn maze that I'm like, wait, I can really go with this. So, okay, all right. I mean, I'm not going to say that next year it's going to be a flamingo because that would be premature. But, I mean, I'm not going to say it's not going to be a flamingo either.